right after the international.
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. And happy Friday. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the December 3rd edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. One of the big football stories this week was Argentina and Paris Saint-Germain superstar Lionel Messi winning his record-extending 7th Ballon d'Or trophy as the best player in the world. For reaction, Iron Mike Mbonye spoke with the chief football writer at ACLSports.com in Nigeria, Fisayo Dairo.
One has to congratulate Lionel Messi for an unprecedented 7th Ballon d'Or crown. It is not at all a mean feat, and a lot of reactions have trailed that particular achievement of his. But I think we should be used to that by now when it comes to individual awards. Football is a team sport. So the most clear-cut awards that will attract no controversy or thereabouts will have to be the team ones. But when it comes to individual, there will always be people arguing for or against whoever have won the awards. Now, Lionel Messi in the past year won the top scorer in the Spanish Premier Division. He was also the top scorer and the best player at the Copa America. Robert Lewandowski was the top scorer in the German Bundesliga and scored plenty of goals in the UEFA Champions League that Chelsea won as well. So there are lots of arguments. Even Jorginho was important for Chelsea in their Champions League conquest and, of course, for Italy at the European Championship. There will always be arguments for or against. And I think I've come to a position where, you know, all these individual awards do not freak me any longer, because no matter what happens, people are going to be voting. They said journalists voted for this particular one. Sometimes sentiments might come into it, but sometimes even their technical acumen might be questioned by the ordinary fans. So I think that Messi has won his award. He is undoubtedly one of the greatest, if not the greatest, in his own generation. Congratulations to him. But in 2022, whoever wins it as well, I think we will have this discourse as to, is he deserving of it or not?
Do you think an African player can win the Ballon d'Or award in future?
It's been a long time since an African won the Ballon d'Or. To be precise, since 1995, when current Liberian president George Oppong-Weah did it, you know. But if you look at the exploits of Africans this age, you would think maybe, especially after Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo retire from football, which of course they are gradually inching towards the twilight of their careers, I think an African might eventually get to win it. Mohamed Salah, who plays for Liverpool, the Egyptian international, has come mightily close in recent years. He's currently one of the hottest prospects in Europe of any race, so he can always nurse his ambition. Perhaps what will be remaining for Salah, maybe to win it in a World Cup year like next year, would be to add, you know, Egypt qualifying for the World Cup and then making an appreciable impact with Salah at the center of it, because the World Cup will count a lot next year. Aside that, his Liverpool teammate Sadio Mane has consistently been one of the best in Africa. Riyad Mahrez is doing well for Manchester City. Victor Osimhen is emerging at Napoli. Quite a number of Africans. So you can never say never. And I strongly believe that by the time Ronaldo and Messi leave the stage, it's going to be thrown wide open for everyone. So at that point in time, I think excelling Africans, exceptional African talents can genuinely look at possibility of winning it.
As we speak, Egyptian star Mohamed Salah has a league-leading 13 goals for Liverpool in the Premier League. Do you see Salah as a future Ballon d'Or winner?
It is quite easy to predicts that Mohamed Salah can win the Ballon d'Or in the future because his trajectory ever since he went to Fiorentina and back to England with Liverpool has been nothing short of being phenomenal. He's consistently been one of the top strikers, one of the top goal scorers in England for the past four seasons. And presently, he's top scorer in the Premier League with 13 goals. He has got 19 goals in all competitions this season for Liverpool, and that shows how big a talent Mohamed Salah is. Is he a possible Ballon d'Or winner in the future? Absolutely. But again, you can never say never in the world of football. Another talent might just emerge next year and start his own competitive level or level of consistency. He still has some young talents, really, to compete with. Kylian Mbappe is still there playing for France, and you can never bet against, especially a player who is playing right there in Europe. Harry Kane, although he hasn't punched up to his weight for Tottenham in the Premier League this season, but we know what he's capable of doing, and he has a World Cup advantage next year as well. These are players in the next 2, 3, 4 years that will always be in the running to win the Ballon d'Or. Will I be glad to see Mohamed Salah win it? Absolutely. I'm an African, and it will really be a delight for an African to lay their hand on that crown for the first time since 1995.
That's Fisayo Dairo, the chief football writer at ACLSports.com in Nigeria. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Port Harcourt, Nigeria.
Sporty greetings. This is Emmanuel Amuneke, former Nigerian player, former Tanzanian coach. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Many thanks. Remain blessed and stay safe. God bless you.
Samson Omale joins us now with another spicy African sports package. And Samson says he has lots of African football news for us. Sporty Friday greetings, Samson.
Sporty Friday greetings to you, Sonny. We'll begin the wrap of African sports action for this weekend with the announcement by the Confederation of African Football that LPRC Oleus of Liberia has withdrawn from the CAF Confederations Cup this season. The announcement, which is coming barely 72 hours before LPRC's scheduled fixture with Orlando Pirates this weekend, has necessitated a cancellation of the fixture in accordance to the regulation of the competition. Similarly, CAF has postponed the Confederation Cup fixture between GS Kabylie of Algeria versus Royal Lepers of Eswatini due to the latest developments related to the COVID-19 travel restrictions with Southern African countries. The second leg game of the additional second preliminary round of the 2021-2022 CAF Confederations Cup fixture is to be played across various venues this Sunday across the continent. Winners over the two legs will now proceed to the group stage of the CAF Confederations Cup. In women's football, Tabitha and Temwa Chawinga were the heroines as the Malawian sisters helped Wuhan Jaginda to win the 2021 Chinese Women's Super League title, becoming back-to-back champions of China. Despite missing for Malawi's Morocco 2022 qualifiers, Ulster against Zambia due to travel restrictions, Tabitha and Temwa inspired Wuhan to a 2-1 comeback win over Jiangsu Suning in the final. In the FIFA Under-20 Women World Cup qualifiers for Africa, the Uganda Under-20 Women's National Team will take on South Africa on Friday at the St. Mary's Stadium, Kitende, in the final round of the FIFA Under-20 Women's World Cup qualifiers. Uganda eliminated Kenya on a 10-3 goal aggregate, and coach Ayub Khalifa is keen on playing for a safe goal margin like he did for Kenya.
We expect nothing other than a win. We don't want anything that is less than a win. That is what we want from tomorrow's game. We've played South Africa, that was in 2019 during the COSAFA Championship. I think we are very prepared at time, and we had all the luck, we won the game. As they're coming on Friday, I'm pretty sure we have organized, we have trained adequately, we prepared these girls, and I know we're going to win the game.
In Lusaka, the Black Princess of Ghana will be taking on the younger Copper Queens of Zambia on Saturday. Head coach of the Ghana Princess, Ben Foku, said the girls have shown determination and hunger for victory in their preparations ahead of this weekend's FIFA Under-20 Women World Cup qualifiers.
I think it's about 3 months ago we started the campaign. making sure that we can have a formidable team to represent the nation. We prepared very well and have some series of friendly matches which we are always positive of winning the game. So for now, as we are going now, we just have to go there and make sure that those players we picked, we're making sure that we can give a good result so that we can beat the nation.
Osaka Ladies Golden Ball and Boot winner from the just concluded CAF Women's Champions League, Evelyn Bidou, says Saturday's encounter is an opportunity to make themselves and Ghana proud.
Should they expect a lot from us because we have been in camp for about 3.5 months now. So I think 3.5 months is enough for me. It's enough for us to have a good preparation, and we are going to make ourselves proud and make Ghana proud too.
And staying with women's football, Super Falcons forward Uche Nakanu has completed a move to Mexican club Tigres UANL Femenil from Swedish club Lekopings FC. The 24-year-old is understood to have penned down a 2-year deal with option of extending with another 12 months with the Liga MX Femenil champions, as she will help her new side continue their league dominance as a gun for their fifth Liga MX Femenil title. And staying with football news, General Secretary of the Ghana Football Association, Prosper Harrison Adoh, has insisted that a no vaccination, no entry policy for fans into stadia in Ghana is to meet the COVID-19 protocol of the Ghana Ministry of Health on the restriction of unvaccinated persons to certain areas from January 2022. The Ghana Football Association in October announced a no vaccination, no entry policy for fans ahead of the 2021-2022 Ghana Premier League season.
In the countries that are full capacity today, it's because they vaccinated to a point. And so we've been helping with the players last year, we do the test and everything. And indeed, if you look at the FIFA document on the return of football, the CAF one, our own match day COVID-19 protocol, it's all to support the health authorities to achieve. Once they achieve, we all achieve.
Hello, sports fans. This is Paul Tergat, marathon champion from Kenya. You are listening to the Sony Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
The National Olympic Committee of Kenya elections has been fixed for December the 9th. The National Olympic Committee of Kenya President Paul Tergat is contesting unopposed following the clearance of 26 candidates to vie for the 13 executive positions. Two other members who will be serving their second term include Humphrey Kayange and Helen Obiri, who is the athlete representative. Football Kenya Federation and Badminton Kenya will not participate in the National Olympic Committee of Kenya elections on December 9th following their suspension by the Kenya Minister of Sport, Amina Mohamed. The returning officer for Knox Electoral Board, Joshua Okumbe, has promised a free, fair and credible election which will be conducted via the secret ballot.
The center is here to give this the very best in terms of integrity, credibility, verifiability. We will ensure this is done to the highest level possible. And we want everybody else out there conducting elections anywhere to emulate what we're going to do online.
In cricket news, Glentin Strowman was the highlight of an impressive bowling performance from South Africa A on the morning of the third day of the second four-day game against India A to help keep the host in the lead by 137 runs at stumps at the Mangwank Oval in Bloemfontein on Thursday. In hockey news, three Egyptian teams, Tirat, Eastern Company, Zamalek, Carter Stars from Nigeria, Ghana Police Service, Ghana Revenue Authority and Ghana Army participated in the just concluded African Cup of Nations for club champions in hockey. At the end of the one-week competition, Tirat Hockey Club from Egypt won the gold after beating fellow Egyptian side Zamalek 7-2 to emerge champions. The third place gong went to Carter Stars of Nigeria. Coach of Tirat Club of Egypt, Karim Zaki, who spoke through an interpreter, said his team deserved the victory.
It is the confidence of the coaches in their players, and their players do what we tell us in the meetings, and we achieve it in the field.
In the female category, host Ghana GRA Royal Ladies won gold medal after inflicting a 3-0 defeat on Delta Queens from Nigeria, who won silver, while another Ghanaian side, Prison Ladies, clinched the bronze medal. Osei Kwesi Yado is a coach of the Ghanaian champions.
We played a fast counter-attack game. Anytime we break, it was, you know, marvelous to watch them, the way they move into position quickly and then take advantage, get into the D, either they get a goal or create a penalty corner.
After hosting a successful club nation championship, the Ghana Hockey Association president, Dr. KD Asante, said hosting the rest of the continent next year will be an event to remember.
Next year, we look forward to having more teams actually come and participate in this tournament again. But even before then, we're having the African Championships, where we'll have the national teams, not the club teams, actually come and duel on this particular pitch. We are really excited to host the rest of Africa come January 2022.
This year's Africa Cup for Club Champions will be the 23rd edition for women and the 32nd edition for the men. In basketball news, the Federation of International Basketball Association, FIBA, has given the Nigerian Basketball Federation, NBBF, Electoral Congress up until January the 31st, 2022 to conduct their elections or risk sanctions. The FIBA stance was communicated via letter addressed to the Nigerian Minister of Youth and Sports, Sunday Dare.
Sporty greetings. This is Sunday Dare, Minister of Youth and Sports Development, Nigeria. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
The Nigerian Basketball Federation has been embroiled in a leadership tussle which has threatened the administration of basketball in Nigeria. FIBA declared it will not entertain any amendment to the 2019 MBBF constitution ahead of the polls. FIBA also unequivocally stated that national member association must manage the affairs independently without the influence of third parties and ensure that the officials are elected or appointed under a democratic process in line with Article 9.7 of the FIBA's general status. In Namibia, the game of handball got a boost this week after the Namibia Sports Commission officially recognized and welcomed the Namibian Handball Federation as a new federation under its wing and issued them with a provisional certificate of registration. Freddy Mua is the chief administrator of the Namibia Sports Commission.
The fruits of this project is going to be realized. And out of these fruits of this project, it must not become a Windhoek-based Namibia Handball Federation. Unless if you tell me, the name will be called Comas Handball Federation.
Interim President of the Namibia Handball Association, Ise Nakawame, expressed optimism that after years of being dormant in the country, Namibia handball is getting a new lease of life.
Our greatest aim for the federation was to unite youth through the sport of handball itself, and to popularize it among all our regions in our country itself.
And finally, the Zimbabwe Karate Union have cancelled their trip to South Africa for the Kyokushin Karate Tournament in Pretoria due to the tightened lockdown measure.
Thanks, Samson. That's Samson Omale with another extra spicy African sports package. The Sunny Side of Sports remembers Lamine Diack, the former head of World Athletics, who was convicted of corruption last year. Diack died Friday at his home in Senegal at the age of 88. He was found guilty of running an operation that covered up Russian doping violations in return for millions of dollars in bribes. A French court sentenced Diack to 4 years in prison in 2020, but he was never jailed. He remained under house arrest in France and was later released on bail, allowing him to return to Senegal. Lamine Diack was president of the International Association of Athletics Federations, now known as World Athletics, from 1999 to 2015. Born in Senegal's capital, Dakar, Lamine Diack was a champion long jumper in the 1950s. He was also briefly the mayor of Dakar and served as senior vice president of Senegal's National Assembly. Lamine Diack, dead at the age of 88.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we can all help fight the corona pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and nose when we are in crowded places or areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Thanks, Heather. I encourage our Sunny Side of Sports listeners to follow me on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. When Tatiana Kulina was growing up in Russia in the 1970s, the skateboarding culture that was starting to take off in America did not exist. Now Tatiana is riding boards here in Washington and empowering young girls to take up the new Olympic sport. Maxim Moskalkov caught up with Tatiana Kulina and filed this report.
Today, Tatiana Kulina is a living legend among Washington, D.C. skateboarders. But growing up in St. Petersburg in the 1970s, Soviet teenagers like her were a continent away from the skateboarding culture that was gaining steam in the U.S. But Kulina found a way to learn something about Western culture.
I met these two guys in downtown St. Petersburg, and they introduced us to their life, introduced us to foreigners, mostly Americans, and we started exchanging things. They would give us foreign magazines and cassette tapes, and we would give them T-shirts with KGB written on them.
When Kulina immigrated to the U.S. in the early 1990s, she fell in love with skateboarding, and so did her daughter.
When we came to the skateboarding park for the first time, there was another young girl, and of course my daughter and I. All the others were boys, and neither me nor my daughter and this other girl had the heart to start skateboarding. We just didn't feel comfortable. And that's when I had an idea to create a skateboarding organization specifically for girls. That's how Skate Girls Tribe started.
Along with the creation of her Skate Girls Tribe nonprofit, Kulina saw a business opportunity as well. She started a company she called Spacey Cloud to sell streetwear and skateboarding equipment. At her store in Washington's Adams Morgan neighborhood, Kulina started using the front space to host music events and provide skateboarding lessons on a ramp in the back. The space is also available for entrepreneurs, especially women, to utilize resources, test out concepts, and market to retail customers.
Skateboarding culture for me was a stress reliever. It was a happy place for me. So I decided to come to Spacey Cloud to do to host an event, help kick off the Girl Skate Clinic here, and I hope to share the happiness.
In 2021, skateboarding was included in the Summer Olympics for the first time. And Spacey Cloud was flooded with new clients inspired by professional athletes in Tokyo.
DC skateboard culture has changed a lot in the last few years since it has been considered for the Olympics. Lots more women are participating. Lots more people in general are participating.
Kulina even took skateboarding to the Kennedy Center, where she curated a festival together with Washington Women in Jazz called On Deck Women Shredding Through Boundaries. That included DJ sets, skate lessons, live music, and film screenings, all designed to draw more women to skateboarding and jazz. Maxim Moskalko for VOA News, Washington.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.
the vice president of FIFA, has come up with a possible compromise to the much-disputed proposal that would change the staging of the World Cup football tournament to every 2 years. VOA's Gwen Uten has details. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. On Monday, I reported that members of the Confederation of African Football had voted unanimously in support of a proposed plan that would see the World Cup staged every 2 years. The controversial proposal launched by FIFA President Gianni Infantino has faced opposition from confederations in Europe and South America that have come out against changes to the tournament's current four-year cycle. But on Thursday, FIFA Vice President Victor Montagliani floated a proposal of his own as a possible compromise solution. And in an exclusive interview with Reuters News, Montagliani said a competition loosely based on the old Confederations Cup could serve as an alternative to a biennial World Cup and bridge the divide within the global governing body.
We used to have something in between the World Cups, which was the old Confederation Cup. And although it wasn't, you know, a tournament that, you know, everybody was turned on to, but for some confederations, it was a nice link between your regional competition to an international competition. And we lost that. And I think the concept of having another competition, a national team competition, I think it was 4 or 5 years ago, we had already discussions of a global nations league. So these discussions are not foreign to the table. You know, they might be, they might look different, right? So whether it's a global nations league, a Confederations Cup, a biennial World Cup, which is what was part of Arsene's plan, they're events that occur in between the current World Cup cycles. And I think the principle of that I like. What I like to see is what is the fallout. And it's not so much on the revenue side of what the revenue, but what is the impact on the ecosystem that we currently have, right? And I think those are some of the questions even UEFA has asked, is what is the impact? And I think that's part of the process that FIFA is looking at. What is the impact, positive or negative? And maybe some parts of the world it's more positive than others, fair enough. But I think our approach is to look at this from a holistic standpoint.
The Confederations Cup was held every 4 years in advance of the World Cup and has not been staged since 2017. Montagliani says his idea for an alternative tournament between World Cups will likely be discussed with FIFA President Gianni Infantino later this month, when many questions still need to be answered.
The principle of having an event in between the World Cups, I'm totally for. The question is, what is that going to be? How do we look at it? How does that affect other things that are in the current ecosystem, like qualification processes, like current tournaments that are in there? I think that's the process that we need to go through. Now, whatever that thing is called and whatever size that is, again, you know, you got to take into account what the calendar is going to look like, right? And how everything else meshes in there, right? And the rest period for the players and when the league starts. So I think those are important elements.
Gianni Infantino has been locked in a bitter dispute with top leagues and clubs, including European Confederation UEFA, over proposals to increase the frequency of the World Cup tournament. And he admits he's looking for a workable solution.
You know, if this is the end point, then obviously there will be no consensus. But if this is the starting point, then we have to see how we can approach the different opinions and the different parties. And to do that, we need to do, as FIFA as well, our part of the job. We need to finalize our feasibility study. We need to look at the sporting merits, at the economic merits, and then we can have a reasoned discussion rather than an emotional discussion about World Cups every 2 years, other types of competitions, what kind of events we can create to make football better and so that everyone can benefit. So I don't know what the ultimate result will be. We have been asked by the Congress to make a study on a feasibility study on World Cups every 2 years and some other matters. That's what we are doing. And at the same time, we englobe and include the feedback of everyone and they try to come up with something good.
Infantino will try to find a consensus when the future of international football will be discussed during a virtual global summit on December 20th. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Gwen. And you have a good weekend, too. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. And that wraps up the December 3rd edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in and have a nice weekend. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. And that's the sunny side of sports.